Coming up on this episode of Inside Pop.
Absolutely everything you want to know about the new television season was announced at the Television Critics Association press tour this past week.
Every network showed up to woo critics, and we've got all of the highlights for you. From a new Star Trek with a familiar face to the winners of the TCA Awards.
All of that's happening, and of course, it's the big sell all now on Inside Pop.
Hey, y'all. I'm Amita Patel.
And I'm Sean David Johnson. And this is Inside Pop. We are your deep dive inside the world of pop culture.
Just a quick note, if you are an Apple Podcast user, head over to iTunes. We would really appreciate it. Subscribe to the podcast. And if you have a couple minutes, give us a rating and write us a nice little review for the show. We truly appreciate it.
Yeah, you can review what we're about to talk about, which is the Television Critics Association press tour. This event happens twice a year, and for television lovers, whether you know it or not, it's one of the biggest deals of the TV season. Essentially, there are about 200 members of the TCA, television critics, and so all of the networks gather, the cable networks, the original five networks, the streaming services. And they basically all do a dog and pony show to present the new exciting series and the new returning series, or the exciting returning series, that are destined for our TVs this fall. So we thought we would dedicate this episode to the TCA because obviously we are big fans of television. And as promised, we'd like to take you inside pop culture. And so there are a lot of interesting announcements that are made, and we think that there's definitely stuff to just get excited about as TV fans, but there's also stuff we want to explain to you and maybe do some hypothesizing based on what was announced and what wasn't announced. So this is like our version of, I don't know, this is like what, Amita, in football when they start drafting people, the draft, right? It's called the NFL draft.
Yes, it's the draft, Sean. Well
Thank
done.
Thank you very much. This is kind of like the NFL draft, except...
Kind of.
Yeah.
Kind of. I wonder if the upfronts are like the draft, and like this is preseason?
Yeah.
Because a lot of these shows we know about, right? But then there's a couple new announcements, and there's like more detail here.
Right. And then we should say, like, so the upfronts, that's another dog and pony show that all the networks do. That's for advertisers. That's when they're trying to get advertisers excited about what they're doing. The TCA is about getting critics excited about what they're doing. And I think for us, the TCA is actually more interesting because the critics are kind of directly connected to the viewer, or more directly connected than advertisers are. So we're we feel like we're being spoken to more directly through TCA events.
That makes sense. I like this. I like this analogy.
Yeah. You know, I'll take a sports analogy whenever I can take it. Should we dive into it? Listen, like this thing goes on for 2 weeks. Everyone gets to speak. Everyone gets to present and bring out their casts and showrunners, etc. But I feel like John Landgraf from FX is the king of the TCA for really one reason.
I mean, he coined the phrase peak TV a few years ago. It's something that we mentioned a few years ago on this podcast, and we have continued to use that phrase because we are in peak TV. There is a plethora of great television, specifically scripted television, that is coming through on all fronts, be it broadcast, cable, streaming platforms like Netflix, Amazon, and Hulu, and CBS All Access, and probably four more that'll probably show up in the next 6 months of this year. But there have been just so many ways to watch and consume television, which means there are so many more series coming out because everybody is just trying to find that next hit. That's really where it comes from, right?
Yeah, and it's, listen, if you thought it peaked, it hasn't. There are actually more series. John Landgraf announced that in the first 6 months of this year, there were 319 scripted series. That's up 5% from last year. That's a lot of scripted series. So essentially, even if you're someone who does nothing but watch TV, you're still missing out on scripted series. There's no way to watch everything. But, you know, it's pro. How are you feeling about peak TV these days? We haven't actually talked about this in a while. Let's have a quick.
We really haven't.
Yeah. So do you. How do you feel about peak TV?
It's overwhelming. I'm not going to lie. I love watching TV. You do too. We have a whole podcast about TV, movie, and film. And so much of it really does take. TV takes up a lot of this a lot of the times lately. And, I am overwhelmed by all the peak TV that's out there, and there's so many things that I want. They have a list. We all talk about what's on our list. I have so many things on my list that I want to continue to watch and start new shows and, you know, pick up old shows that I haven't watched. And it's like I don't have enough time, but I want to because it's supposed to be really, really good stuff out there. It's a lot. It's a whole lot.
Well, according to the stats, Amita, you have the streaming sites to blame because
I do.
76 scripted series this year came from streaming services. That's Netflix, mm-hmm. that's Hulu, that's Amazon, and that's a lot of scripted series from just those. But premium cable, HBO and Showtime, they had 27 scripted series. Basically, all of that to say that HBO and Showtime are increasing the number of scripted series, as are the streaming services. All of that to say that there's more TV coming into your eyeballs and earbuds now than there was last year. And, you know, it basically just means that TV critics have their work cut out for them. And maybe as podcasters, Amita, we have our work cut out for us because people are looking for some information, all right? How do I choose? Should I watch Killing Eve? Is it worth the hype? Should I should I stick with, you know, How to Get Away with Murder? You know, should I watch, you know, is it still good enough or should I watch Killing Eve instead? Or should I watch the new Sons of Anarchy spinoff, right? So there's so much TV that I think maybe people who didn't care about critics care about them a little bit more because they just need some kind of guidance, someone to tell them, yeah, this is worth your time, your precious time.
Yeah, I agree. I think there needs to be somebody to steer the ship. Many captains to just be like, you know what? I can tell you right now from the example you just gave. Yes, I think How to Get Away with Murder. Sorry, Viola Davis. You're amazing. I think it's run its course. I would highly recommend watching Killing Eve. I would recommend watching The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. I think there are some really cool programming coming out on many fronts. I just watched some of Barry and I thought that was cool. There was so much really great series out there that there's certain ones you're going to have to drop in order to make some space for the new ones. And there are some really great new ones that you want to give some time to.
Yo, it's survival of the fittest. So let's talk about what's fit. Let's start with the gorilla in the room. And I will say this, that when I was at the Producers Guild Produced By Conference this year, no matter what panel I went to, Netflix came up. Netflix is the 8,000-pound gorilla in the room.
Yes.
I think that if you don't work for Netflix, you're jealous of Netflix or you hate Netflix. But basically, Netflix has so much money and they're producing so much content that they are driving the conversation, whether you want them to or not. So let's talk about what Netflix had to say at the TCAs.
Yeah, Netflix had a lot to say, and they didn't show up last year.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's odd to me because obviously they've been pumping out programming for a few years now, but they took a break last year, and they have so much to be proud of, specifically already, you know, beating HBO for the most Emmy nominations. So they probably came in real proud, because all of the money they've been pumping into their scripted series have been paying off. The critics have noticed it, and the critics want more.
Yeah, and I read one critic, I think it was Alan Sepinwall, who described what the Netflix presentation was like. And he said that, you know, sometimes he felt like the executives were like, do I really need to be here? Right? Like, I feel like Netflix is so all powerful, the great and powerful Netflix, that they don't really need the TCA. But so here are a couple of my takeaways. A couple of things that we wanted Netflix to talk about that they did not talk about. We wanted them to talk about that amazing deal they signed with the Obamas. Everyone wanted the Obamas. They got them. We heard nothing about what might happen with them. Kenya Barris, creator of Black-ish, he is officially leaving ABC for Netflix. We did not hear anything about him and what he's doing. But we did hear about four new Netflix shows. One of them is starring Octavia Spencer, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
And for me, I would say the biggest Netflix takeaway is this little factoid. Everyone, hold on to your seats. Netflix forecasts that it will spend roughly $8 billion on content this year. Amita, $8 billion on TV, artistry, content, pretty pictures.
That's a lot, a whole lot. And they cover a lot now. You know, they've gone into documentaries and, you know, scripted series and competitions and reality. I can understand where that $8 billion is coming from. You know, if they ever want to do a podcast, like, come talk to us and come broadcast our podcast. You have enough money, you know, just stick a camera in our houses and you've got, just get more content on your channel, please. Like,
and give us $2 million. So Netflix kind of rules the world, but thank God it's not a monopoly. I thank God that there are other networks who are announcing shows that we're excited about and who are doing cool things and are competing with Netflix for eyeballs and for Emmys.
Yeah, you know, I think HBO made a great point. You know, they obviously are probably feeling a little sore that they've been the leader for a very long time. Especially with critical acclaim and awards acclaim. And, you know, they're feeling a little like they've been surpassed by Netflix. But they also are sitting there like they don't want to go, you know, expand too fast. You know, they've always been about quality and they are going to try to stick to that. They're not going to get caught up in the game of pumping out too much too fast. You know, and I'm not saying that Netflix is doing that, but it is a potential risk for the way that Netflix is pumping out programming. Something that obviously we've talked about a couple times on the podcast that everybody's excited about from HBO is the Game of Thrones spinoff. Dun, dun, dun. What is your song? Swords, swords, dragons.
Swords, swords, dragons, and sword spinoff. Ooh, I didn't think I would get to sing that song until 2019.
You're welcome, everyone and myself. I was really excited to hear that again. So what they did was they actually got a bunch of different writers to try about four or five different spinoffs. And it was more of just like throwing a lot at the wall to see what sticks. I think that's actually really smart. They probably didn't think that all five would be phenomenal, and they went with one that is, they're hopefully going to get one that they're really excited about, and they said that they did. So it's exciting to, you know, hear that they have a spinoff that's working. I don't know what it's about, but I'm excited no matter what.
I think like they commissioned five separate scripts, all Game of Thrones related. And there is basically, very smart. I mean, paying writers to write a script and develop a script, you know, that's probably hundreds of thousands of dollars over time. But, you know, doing a pilot is millions of dollars. So they decided to go forward with one of the five scripts. And so it's a prequel. So my goal, my dream of a Brienne of Tarth procedural series is not yet realized. Maybe in the future.
Not yet. But that's a perfect prequel as well. I'm just saying.
I don't knowing the character of Brienne of Tarth the way I do, I don't think she was solving mysteries on a weekly basis before the before the actions of Game of Thrones.
I mean, she could be. She could be like, somebody lost their sword. Let me go find it. You know, like, there's things that happen out there. Like, somebody got murdered or hung by a tree. Let's figure this out. Brienne of Tarth, go get him.
No, she was all about Renly. That's all she saw was Renly.
Somebody stole Renly's sword. I'm going to go get it.
No, I want like the newly confident Brienne of Tarth. I want to see more of her. Mm. Hopefully she survives Game of Thrones. We'll see. All right. I really want Brienne of Tarth to survive. There probably aren't going to be many survivors. All right, let's talk about what else we're excited about. Let's talk about new series announcements. Yes. Amita, are there any new series? Well, we just talked about Game of Thrones. Anything else you're excited about?
Well, not anything that I'm super excited about that isn't a returning series, so we'll get to that soon. But I feel like you're excited about a really big Star Trek announcement.
Yes, the internet has been a-buzzing, but this surprises me in so many ways, but it is official. Sir Patrick Stewart is going to return as Captain Jean-Luc Picard on a new Star Trek series. It's amazing. So this is what surprises me. Of course, as a Trekkie, I'm a Trekker. I am thrilled. I've seen Patrick Stewart live on stage a number of times. I saw him in The Tempest. I saw him in Waiting for Godot opposite Ian McKellen. And I saw him in a one-man show of A Christmas Carol. I love Patrick Stewart a lot. I love Captain Jean-Luc Picard a lot. I am surprised that this is happening for two reasons. One, I think he's had a pretty content life and a pretty great career post-Star Trek. So I'm surprised that he wanted to return to this. I guess it's money, maybe. Maybe he missed the character. But I'm also surprised that CBS All Access is doubling down on a 70-something actor to star in a show, right? Like, all we hear about is youth and an 18 to 34 demo. So I'm surprised, but I'll say pleasantly surprised, that a 70-something-year-old man, and I'm guessing that, hopefully he's not in his 40s, a 70-something-year-old man is being made the star and the centerpiece of a series. That's extraordinary to me.
It completely is. I'm not surprised, because he's amazing, as you have already said. But I think that it makes sense. You know, I can't wait. I would love to know what our friends at the Greatest Generation podcast would think of this. And I'm sure they've probably already reacted, and I want to know their thoughts. Because I remember you had a conversation with Ben Harrison from the Greatest Generation podcast, which is also on Maximum Fun, about how just incredibly profound and what a great leader Patrick Stewart as Jean-Luc Picard was. And I think there may be this, I feel like there's this need for positive characters that we need to look forward to. Maybe because we don't have that many positive leaders to look forward to right now. I don't know. I digress. But I think that maybe because that character was so revered and so loved and really did have this incredible sense of compassion and leadership, it was time to bring him back.
Yeah, and I think that there's definitely Gen X, if you want Gen X to watch your service, I bet they do. I bet Gen X is probably a core demo of CBS All Access, right? Like, anyone younger than baby boomers, CBS All Access is probably happy to have. So yeah, I'm sure they worked the numbers, and I'm sure it's a smart move. And yeah, I can't wait for that. The other show that was announced at the TCA Awards that I am ridiculously excited about is a remake of Shogun, which is a novel from the 70s. And it was originally a miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain in 1980. And honestly, that's one of the first, I read the book after watching the miniseries, and that was one of the, I think that was the beginning of my obsession with Japan and Japanese culture. So I'm excited because Alex Garland, who directed Ex Machina, one of my favorite movies of this decade, is the EP, and he's committed to directing all of the episodes of that series.
That right there is enough to sign me up for it, because I loved Ex Machina as well. It's also on FX, which has a really great track record of putting out quality programming. They are behind Fargo and Sons of Anarchy and one of my favorite shows, Atlanta, and American Horror Story, American Crime Story. Like, they do, they have raised the cable level along with AMC with putting out extremely great programming on television in the scripted realm. And so FX behind this as well, I feel like, is going to be a really great, great fit.
Yeah. The only thing I'm not excited about is it is kind of one of many, let's look at a foreign culture through the eyes of a white man, right? Like, that's what Shogun is. It's like, there's a, it's a British sailor who washes up on the shores of Japan. So there's part of me that's like, ugh, I don't need this. Can I just get Japanese culture without having a white dude involved? But we'll see what Alex Garland does. Maybe he'll do something interesting with that. And I think it'll be a great chance for a lot of Asian actors to get some great roles. And yeah, hopefully they'll be really kind of smart and creative and 2018 about it. But I'm ready. I'm ready to check
it out.
Let's
hope. I'm ready. Yeah. Let's hope for that. Yeah. There are also a lot of returning series that were buzzing through the TCA press tour these last couple weeks. One of which I was really intrigued to hear about, also an FX series that, thanks to you, I got into, Fargo Season 4 has a new star named Chris Rock.
I'm ready.
I'm ready. I'm so ready.
Fargo is, ooh, I want to say something. It's the best show on TV. Fargo is really the, like, I think, I don't know what's better than Fargo. I don't know what current television is better than Fargo. I think it's just so well written, so well acted, so risk-taking, and so satisfying. It's just the best.
I love your love for Fargo.
Yeah, I do love Fargo. I'm watching season one for the first time, actually, right now this summer. That's a summer project I have. Because I missed season one, and so I watched season two, then season three, now I'm watching season one. But anyway, I'm so so glad that they're making a season four, and I love this premise, which is, like, I think it's set in the 50s, and it's about two warring crime families. One's African American and one's Italian American, and yeah, it's essentially about how, you know, this African American family migrated from the South, and then this Italian-American family migrated from Italy, and now there are these two opposing forces, probably somewhere near Fargo. And yeah, so the writing that I know will be brilliant, and then Chris Rock, who, you know, I've never thought of him as the greatest actor, but I always give him credit for stretching himself, for trying different things, for not just going with what's expected. So I expect him, I just see him elevating and elevated by this role.
Yeah, yeah. They gave a little bit of the premise, and I guess, as you said, there's two families, an African-American family leaving the South and the Italian family migrating from Europe, and Chris Rock is the head of one of those families, and they both, the heads of both of the families, had to trade their eldest sons to keep the peace, which is so intriguing already. And FX had said it's a story of immigration and assimilation and the things we do for money. Just that alone sounds just ripe for incredible drama, which Fargo definitely knows how to bring. So I'm very, very excited for your favorite show to come back.
Oh, I'm so ready. Ready is the word. Yeah. What else?
It's not coming until next year, though, unfortunately.
You know what? That's fine, because I still have to finish season one and then about 80 yeah. other things on my to-watch list. So, I'll be ready. Yeah.
I need to get into season one, because everybody was so hooked up to season one. I did three, then two, and now I got to watch one.
Yeah, one's quite good. Quite good. So I know one show that you care about, there was some news at the TCA about Homeland.
Yeah, Homeland is calling it after season eight. That's it for them. I actually am happy about this. Kara, the actress that plays Carrie, Clara Danes, had mentioned this might be the end. She's also pregnant again. I think it was just kind of a combination of she's pregnant. I think that this character has run a very good course. Homeland is still a great drama. They always know how to really keep the suspense in this series at a great level. And sometimes it's a little bit low, but then, you know, I feel like every season I'm like, should I watch it? And by episode 3 or 4, they really turn it up a notch and you're like, no, I got to keep watching this. I really need to know where they're going. And so I've kept with the series, and I think they ended season 7 at a really great place, and it'll be interesting to see how they wrap it all up.
That's awesome. I might tune in for, I mean, I haven't watched it, I think, since season 3, but it could be interesting to watch this final season. So I might check that out. Other news, returning series. We all know that it's reboot central on TV these days. I, for one, am excited about the Murphy Brown reboot just because it makes sense, right? If Murphy Brown was this political, social, liberal force in the 90s, what better time than now to bring her back and the crew of FYI back? And at the TCA, obviously, when CBS took the stage, there were so many questions about Les Moonves and basically the overall culture of CBS and whether they are worse than others in terms of dealing with and preventing sexual harassment. So I don't know. I think that, I mean, I wasn't there, so I don't want to say too much about what the mood in the room was, but I do know I read that when the Murphy Brown people took the stage, they were like, listen, sexual harassment is bad. We are shocked by these allegations, but we, you know, we worked hard on this show, so we really want to talk about this show.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's also still under investigation, and they're, you know, respecting the fact that it's under investigation, and they're going to, I think, deal with whatever outcome there is on that front, but also continue with their show because it's important. I mean, Murphy Brown was groundbreaking when it came out. I loved that show. I think it probably was a part of the reason why I wanted to study journalism. And I am so excited for it to come back. I think it's going to, I think it was really smart and powerful in so many ways with a lot of the topics that they discussed. So, and very funny also. It's a comedy. So I can't wait to see this cast come back together and to see what they do.
And there actually will be an episode, I think it's the 4th episode of the season, is called #Murphy2, and we'll deal with the Me Too issue. So that'll be interesting. That's definitely
must see TV right there.
Yeah. Let's see, other things. I've written American Horror Story off. I don't really care anymore, but now I do care because they are American Horror Story Apocalypse, which premieres this October. Is basically taking season 1, which I liked, season 3, the witch season, which I loved, and doing a crossover event. So you got me again, Ryan Murphy. I will be watching American Horror Story season 8. And guess what? It's already been renewed for seasons 9 and 10, also announced at the TCA.
Wow. That series, honestly, has lasted so long. And, was one of the first ones to really go through that new format of one series, but every season a different storyline, but similar characters. I think it started that trend, and it's obviously been super successful. And I've never watched one episode.
I know. Horror's not your thing, girl. And that's okay. That's fine.
It's not. But kudos to that series. And it's interesting to hear that, you know, Ryan Murphy's still's got some you know, hit series on FX, but he also is going to have this Netflix deal that's coming up, which he was kind of mum about, but it's going to be interesting to see these next few seasons of Horror Story and Crime Story, and Pose has a second season, but then also him hustle the Netflix game as well. That guy's got it all right now, I must say. He's busy.
He is busy. Good for him. I look forward to seeing what he does on Netflix because...
Me too.
You know, no censorship, so...
Yeah.
I mean, he pushes the boundaries on FX, so it'll be interesting to see what he does.
Yeah. I kept saying when Shonda Rhimes made her deal with Netflix, I was like, I can't wait to hear her curse at stuff. That's like... So we'll see. We shall see, for sure.
So they also give out awards at the TCA Press Tour. And so, Amita, do you want to tell us about some of the awards that were given out?
Yeah, and it's ladies first, I feel, with the awards. Awards are interesting for TCAs because they don't act, they mix together actors, male and female, for drama, same for comedy. And so it was really great to see that Carrie Russell for The Americans won in drama, and Rachel Brosnahan for The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel on Amazon won for comedy. And I don't watch The Americans. It's on that list that I need to watch. But I've heard amazing things about the series, and it's their last season as well. So it was a nice little swan song to get Program of the Year and achievement for Carrie Russell on that. And shout out to Killing Eve for outstanding new program. Big, you know, move for BBC America to get that show on the critics list and to win. Congrats to that show. I really enjoyed that quite a bit, so I'm excited about that. And shout out to our guys at Queer Eye. They got outstanding achievement in reality programming. So it's a really great indicator for the Emmys. Hopefully our friend James and the entire team at Queer Eye might win an Emmy as well.
Yeah, I feel like it's all about momentum. I feel like Killing Eve definitely has momentum. That show is just building from, you know, a show that I think premiered kind of quietly, and then every episode went up in ratings. And I think, you know, then the television critics made a big stink about, oh yeah, it's actually a really good show. It's actually a really good show. So, I think for smaller shows that may not have huge marketing budgets, like Queer Eye probably had a big marketing budget, but I think, again, with peak TV, even a show with a big marketing budget still can get lost in the crowd. So I think for a show like Queer Eye or a show like The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel or Killing Eve, to break through when you're essentially a smaller show is a feat. So I think those awards are well deserved.
Yeah, and I think I read somewhere that nobody from last year won this year. So I give it to the television critics that they're trying to show some love and spread the love to other things, because they very well could have given Elizabeth Moss the drama award, but Carrie Russell got it. So I like that they're kind of spreading that love.
Yeah, the new. Good job, TCA. So there you have it. It's like there's a lot that goes down at the TCAs. But really it's all about you, the TV viewer, getting you and the critics excited about what's coming up and really helping you to start making your choices this early about what you're going to watch. So I already have a list that's too long based on the TCAs.
I have a list that's too long before the TCAs, and now it's getting longer. So if you want to find me, I'll be just chained to my couch.
Eyeballs pinned up, just watering. But that's what we're willing to do for you, loyal Inside Pop listeners. All right, well, there you have it. That's the TCAs, but we have more on our show coming up. It's The Big Sell after these two very short messages.
So you want to understand what's going on in the world,
but trying to keep up with the news can be such a headache.
With clickbait headlines, TV news acting like there's always two equal sides to every story,
and never enough talk about the various McDonald Playland characters.
Okay, in my defense, though, when I brought that up, we learned a lot.
That's true.
I'm Brent Black.
I'm Courtney Unlow.
And I'm Travis McElroy.
With Trends Like These.
Real-life friends talking internet trends.
We debunk misleading headlines from the top trending news.
We always throw in at least one positive story.
But we call out bullshit when we see it.
Join us each week on MaximumFun.org.
Because with Trends Like These,
who needs any memes?
Ah? Ah?
Yeah, that was great.
Hi, Hi, I'm Allie Gertz.
And I'm Julia Prescott, and we're
Everything's Coming Up Simpsons.
We are a Simpsons podcast on the Maximum Fun Network, and we've got some exciting news.
Ooh, tell me.
We are going to be doing some live podcast shows in some of our favorite cities. We're so excited, and we want to let you guys know out there in the Max Fun universe that we are coming to you.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. On Saturday, September 15th, we will be at the North Door in Austin, Texas.
Yeehaw.
On Saturday, December 1st, we will be at the Alamo Draft House, Sloan's Lake in Denver, Colorado.
There's no basement in the Alamo.
We'll find out. Friday, December 7th, we are going to be at the Vera Project in Seattle, Washington.
Oh, God. Nirvana.
Yes.
Okay.
And Saturday, December 8th, we will be at Mississippi Studios in Portland, Oregon.
Hey, Matt Groening lives there.
Yes.
Or once lived there.
He still lives there in our hearts. So make sure that you mark your calendars for those dates, and we will be posting the ticketing links on our Twitter. That is at Simpsons Pod, and we will smell you later.
Welcome back to Inside Pop.
It is now time for The Big Sell. It is the segment, of course, where, when, why, Amit and I take turns recommending something from the world of pop culture to the other. And then, in 14 days' time, we return to share a rating of what had been big sold to us. So, last week, for example, Amita Patel big sold a new song by an established artist, Chaka Khan. Like Sugar? Is that the name of the song? Like Sugar.
Yes. Yes, Chaka Khan, Chaka Khan. She came back with a new track, and I had to share it. And I'd love to know what you think.
I believe that Chaka Khan is one of our great R&B singers. I believe that Chaka Khan easily has like 14 songs that are just, I put any R&B songs against those in terms of like great R&B soul songs. Like Sugar, not one of those 14.
Oh, no.
Yeah, no, I think it's, I mean, it's... Maybe like this is like an expanded conversation. I feel like it's, and this could be an interesting segment. You know, I feel like when you're an artist, you know, whether you're U2 or Prince when he was alive, or Chaka Khan, or like if you're someone who's Madonna, right? If you're someone who's been around for decades and people really love you for your early career, a certain amount of time. What do you do? Some people just do greatest tour hits. Some people keep trying to make new music, and it's always usually unfavorably compared to you when you were at your peak. But I think some people succeed. I feel like U2 has succeeded. I feel like Madonna has succeeded in making music that I'm just as excited to hear as listening to their older stuff, right? Like Madonna's last album, there are a couple of songs in there that I'm like, oh yeah, I'll listen to this and not Erotica, right? Like like some really great songs.
Mm-hmm.
For this song, I feel like it doesn't even come close to any of her classics. I don't know. It feels a little overproduced to me. Like I feel like her voice kind of gets hidden in all of the production.
Interesting.
Okay. And it also feels a little repetitive, right? Like, I feel like it's just that, like, very, very, very simple rhyming.
Mm-hmm.
Help me out with the term. Chorus? No, verse. And then chorus. So, yeah, it didn't really get... But, so I watched the video, though, which you had recommended.
I did. Off the podcast, I said you really should check out the video because it's also really fun.
IRL. And I watched that too. I actually like the video more than the song. The video is cool. Everyone should watch the video. It's beautifully cast. It's like the Sensates in a music video. It's like these beautifully cast people of color dancing, beautifully photographed to the song. So I liked that a lot. But yeah, I wasn't crazy about the song. I would rather listen to, you know, is it Epiphany? I think that's her best of album. Yeah, I'm not really feeling that new song, dog. That's my Randy Jackson impression.
Thank you, Randy Jackson Johnson. It's interesting because I didn't listen to this with any type of like comparison to her old stuff. Mm-hmm. I just listened to this as like, oh, wow, Chaka Khan came out with something new. She's kind of giving us a little bit of an update, not going too crazy with being, you know, super, you know, I don't know, electro, you know, or anything like that, but updating her sound a little bit. And every time I hear this song, and I've heard it quite a bit, it makes me tap my foot. It makes me want to dance. It has a really great summer song feeling to it. And I love that about it.
Do you know, I'd be interested to know like who wrote it, who produced it. I wonder if she kind of went for the big guns. I'd also like to know why she did it, you know, like why she made a new song. You know, like the story behind that. So I should.
I'm just thinking maybe she loved the song.
But yeah, like, but.
Just enough. No.
But yeah.
She did announce she's going to come out with a new album in over a decade.
Oh, wow. 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 Okay. I've got to say, yes. Even though I'm not feeling this song, I'm interested and excited and intrigued by a new Chaka Khan album. I think that's good. Like, you know, like for the artist who still feels that need to create, I like Chaka Khan, I applaud that. Like keep creating, keep trying new things or do the old thing that worked for you, whatever it is. I'm excited to hear it.
Just not this one though.
No, not this one. Not this one. It's okay. So this one I'm going to give, I mean, I could never give Chaka anything to do with her less than 2¾ stars. So that's what I'm going to get. Okay. So that song is getting 2¾ stars. That's 2.75 stars.
All right. Well, I'll take those 2.75 stars. I will do my funky dance to Like Sugar with those 2¾ stars all summer long, because I did love this track. What do you have to sell for me this week?
Also musically connected. So Amita and I went to the Podcast Movement convention. It's a convention for podcasters. And normally, right after that sentence, I would kind of smart-aleckly, self-deprecatingly say, nerd alert. Right, because, oh, we're podcasters, we're nerds. But after this podcast movement, 2018, oh, yeah, there were some nerds there. But there were also some really cool, smart, stylish, interesting, awesome people. We met a ton of incredible podcasters,
so many inspired.
We actually spoke. Had moderated a fireside chat. It went so well. We wish all of you had been there. One of the great things about Podcast Movement for me is that I spoke to a ton of people who gave me amazing podcast recommendations, not even their own, although we got those as well. And I have a long list of podcasts I need to listen to.
Same.
But so I'm going to big sell to you, Amita, a podcast that someone recommended to me. It wasn't their own. But basically, based on what we do on our podcast and based on what I shared and other podcasts I love, this person, I would say, brilliantly recommended. Basically, he big sold me this podcast. The name of the show is called Dissect.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard of this?
No.
So it's pretty remarkable. The host of Dissect spent the first season dissecting an album.
Ooh, that's cool.
So previous seasons focused on Kanye West and Kendrick Lamar's How to Pimp a Butterfly. This season of Dissect is all about Frank Ocean, and they're actually doing an extra long season because what he wants to do is show the progression from Channel Orange to his most recent album that we waited 4 years for.
Oh my gosh, how excited are you about that?
I'm pretty damn excited. So this is what I did. I kind of listened out of order. So I listened to episode 1 of season 3, which is essentially just like the bio package. And I did know a lot of that information. I know this is Frank Ocean. This is where he grew up. This is what his relationship with his mother is like. This is, you know, so, but really interesting stuff if you're not a Frank Ocean expert. But what I want to big sell to you is I want you to jump around the way I did. So I'm going to big sell to you, dissect season 3, episode Pink and White. So this episode is just about the song Pink and White. And It's pretty remarkable. So I'll just very quickly, I love it because without hesitation, he offers you his interpretation of the lyrics of the song. And it's partly based on interviews that Frank Ocean has done in the past and his own skill at interpreting lyrics. He also explains the music. And for someone like myself, who, and I've made a big deal about this in the past, I never really learned how to read music. I don't have a musical knowledge. I don't have what is a naturally good ear for music, but I like to push myself and I like to learn more about music. So this feels like it was built for me. So this episode that I'm sharing with you, Amita, for example, he tells you that the song Pink and White begins with a trill. I don't know what a trill is, but he explains to me that a trill is when you play two notes. One note is what, like a quarter of a note higher than the next, and you play it very quickly together. I learned that. I know stuff now.
Yeah, a trill is usually done by a flute or a piccolo, but yes, it's a trill.
Yeah, so you know the stuff. So I think it's going to be interesting for you because it's going to be information that you know, but also, and this is also podcast movement related, we had a conversation, I'm not going to name names, but we had a conversation at Podcast Movement and someone was like asking us a lot of questions about ourselves and they started asking you about your background with music and they kept asking you question after question and it was really interesting for me to hear you talk about how you used to be like a multi-instrumentalist. You played a million instruments like Prince.
I did.
And so I'm very interested in hearing you respond to this episode, which like for 101 like me, I'm really enjoying it. But what I'm hoping is it'll also just be like a nice refresher, or it'll be interesting for you to hear someone who knows a lot about music as you do talk about it, but then relate it to a pop song. So it's called Dissect, and the season is all about Frank Ocean, and the episode I'm recommending to you, big selling to you, is all about the song Pink and White, which is the third song on Frank Ocean's latest album.
All right. This is great. I can't wait to hear this. I finally found a podcast to obsess over for the summer.
Yeah.
I was looking for one. I'm not going to lie. I needed one to obsess over for the summer because all I've been doing is obsessing over Peak TV. All right.
How much do you know about Gregorian chants? You're going to learn about Gregorian chants in this episode about Pink and White.
I don't know that much about Gregorian chants, so I'm excited. Very excited. Thank you for that.
I like that you're excited about Gregorian chants, as am I.
I am.
Yeah.
Are those the ones that were in that song Enigma?
Oh my God. That song.
All right. Well, thank you for that big sell. And I think it's time to wrap it up. That is it for us. Please, as always, stay in touch with us on Twitter and Instagram at Pop Insiders. Like us on Facebook and visit our official website at InsidePopPodcast.com to subscribe.
And you can also find us on MaximumFun.org. That is a podcast network of which we are proud members. So you can find us along with a lot of other nifty podcasts about comedy and culture.
And as always, you can find us here every other week, diving deeper and deeper inside the world of pop culture. So stick with us, Inside Pop, every other week on Maximum Fun and anywhere you find great podcasts.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.